The Torah content from now through Pesach has been sponsored by the Kofsky family in loving memory of Adira, who loved big ideas and asking big questions.
Okay, so two things on the agenda today. I want to do a brief introduction to what I learned about the Yad Peshuta, and then I want to do the Yad Peshuta on the halachas we did yesterday. So Yad Peshuta is written by Nachum Rabinovich, I don't know how to say it, 1928 to 2020, May 2020, died very recently, and was the Rosh Yeshiva, maybe founder of Birkat Moshe? Let's see. No, he accepted a position to become Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshiva Birkat Moshe, which is the place that does all the Rambam stuff and all the Rabag stuff and all the, like, a lot of the good, you know, the good stuff there. Yeah. And there's more here about this. Okay. But what I read was a review in Chakira of a set of essays he wrote in Hebrew called Iyunim B'Mishnato Shal Rambam, Studies in Maimonides, in 2010. And by this review is by Abraham Feintuch, and he, I hadn't heard of him before. So he basically talks about what the chidushim or the contributions are of Rabbi Rabinovich here, and then says these are the methods he uses in the Yad Peshuta. Okay, so this is a 16-page thing, but I just wanted to highlight a few things, like literally. So he starts off by talking about the other good commentaries and editions on the Rambam. So Frankel is a good edition. And then he says, Rav Kafach has published a new edition of Mishnah Torah, that's that red one, based on Yemenite manuscripts, which corrects many errors that appear in the classical printed edition. This includes a comprehensive commentary, which, while mostly based on cut and paste from the standard commentaries, also contains many original comments, as well as excerpts from various commentaries that were not previously printed on the same page with the Rambam's text. So if you've ever used Kafach's commentary, it's basically a big digest of, like, all the Nosakelim, and then, like, sometimes other Rishonim and how they learn the Sugya of the Rambam. Okay. But he uses cut and paste to contrast it with the Yad Peshuta. So he says, on the other hand, Rav Rabinovich's new commentary rejects almost completely the cut and paste technology and presents an original work that integrates the knowledge and understanding of the previous 800 plus years with new information and ideas in order to attempt to clarify the text of the Mishnah Torah to the greatest extent possible. Now, I don't think it means he never quotes the Nosakelim, but you'll see that in the commentary, he works with primary sources in, like, Torah Shvapeh literature and Gaonic works, more so than, like, what the classical, like, Magid Mishnah, Kesef Mishnah are doing. Okay, then just two methodology things. He says that Rabinovich formulates an interesting principle that serves him in his efforts to resolve known difficulties that have puzzled generations of rabbinic commentaries on the Mishnah Torah. Rambam makes supreme efforts to preserve the terminology of the original Talmudic sources whenever possible, including when he must translate the Aramaic of the Talmud to the unique Hebrew of the Mishnah Torah. So that's one of his premises, which is that the Rambam tries to preserve the original language as much as possible. And then he uses the Yad Peshuta uses this to, when the Rambam deviates, to use that as insights into how the Rambam is learning the Sugya. Okay, so that's something that he's, again, I don't know Rambam scholarship. He's saying that that was a unique approach that Rav Rabinovich took that not everyone else takes. And he gives examples, which you
is
can.
That, is that to mean, like, when he uses, when the Rambam uses a different language, that he's, like, arguing with the Gemara?
No, that he, we could go through this little example here, I guess. He says, the author demonstrates the use of this principle in various things. He'll present one example in the shofar. So it says, V'shofar shetokin bo, Rambam writes, Bein v'rosh Hashanah, Bein b'yovel, hu karen hakavasim hakafo. So it is the horn, the bent horn of rams, right, kevis. V'chol ha-shofros chutz mikaren hakevis p'sulim. All shofros other than that are then the Karen HaKevis is our apostle. Ravid remarks, he frees Amidosav, which is probably some insults. Okay, I don't know what exactly it means. Ela mitzvah bekufin. Rather, it's a mitzvah bekufin. V'im taka b'shal ya'al yata. So he says, no, really, it's a mitzvah to do it with a kuf of one. But if you did it with a straight one, then that's also yotze. A presentation of the author's complete analysis of these positions is beyond the scope of this review, and the readers refer to Yad Peshuta. The main and obvious source for this discussion is Rosh Hashanah 26a through b. In particular, one considers the statement, Amar Rabbi Levi, mitzvah shel Rosh Hashanah v'shel Yom HaKippurim b'kufin v'shel kol Hashanah b'pshutin. So it says the mitzvah of Rosh Hashanah and Yom HaKippurim is with a bent horn, and of the rest of the year, presumably that's like with a... presumably that is with the Chatzotros shofar combo on Tinus. That's the pshutin. That's with a straight horn. There are many Talmudic texts where mitzvah means preferable and not required, and in fact, Rambam often uses this the term in this sense in the Mishnah Torah. This is the basis for the Ravid's objection to the Rambam's position that kufin are required. Rabinovich observes that, in fact, the precise term teren hakavasim hakafuv does not appear in the sugya. The closest term appears in the words of Rabbi Yehuda, zecharim kufin. Thus, one may speculate that, in fact, there is another Talmudic source that the Rambam integrated into his reasoning that led to his conclusion here Rabbi Levi uses the term mitzvah for required. Sorry, I was mixing two points. I was saying how when the Rambam deviates in his Lashon, that shows interpretation. He's making another point, which is that because the Rambam always prioritizes the original Lashon, then as much as possible, then you can use that to trace back the Rambam source. And he says, the author then suggests such a source in Yerushalmi, Brachos, 1:9:1, Amar Rabbi Levi, Arabia korin li'imra yuvla, v'haya b'mashuch b'keren hayovel. So Rabbi Levi says in Arabia, they would call a sheep yuvla, like yovel, and v'haya b'mashuch b'keren hayovel, and that's what was sounded on the keren hayovel. The Aramaic imra translates to keves, and Rabbi Levi is stating that the word yovel, which is the biblical word for shofar, means keren hakeves. Rav Rabinovich argues that the Rambam's requirement of keren hakeves is based on his integrating the statement in the sugi and Rosh Hashanah with that in the Yerushalmi brachos. So it's like giving a flavor of the unique type of analysis. Okay. Another one is, he says, a second principle that the author formulates for clarifying the content of halachos is that their context is critical. So this we know from the way we learn in Rambam Bekius, and the way, let's say, like many Rambam commentaries, especially like, many bristers completely, like, they just treat it as a almost like a commentary on Shas. You know, Rambam is a commentary on Shas, just taking a shitos, or just taking, like, you know, the statements. And he says the Ein Mishpat Ner Mitzvah on the side might have done people a disservice because it allows students to look up the halachos outside of their context. Mm-hmm. You know, like, it lends itself to that as opposed to, like, being familiar with the thing. So he says, it should be stated clearly that those halachos for which the Talmudic sources are easily identifiable are masterful literary creations, not simply a cut and paste exercise. Rambam's artistry expresses itself in many ways. Now, this is a critical point. While he generally made it clear to us when a conclusion is not of Talmudic origin, but based on his own reasoning, v'li nira, I think that's a typo here, he does not feel required to do so when an original rationale for a law of Talmudic origin is presented, whether on the basis of svara or on an original interpretation of the biblical text. Thus, we can never be sure if such a rationale is based on a source not yet identified or is in fact an original idea of the Rambam. So that's an interesting thing, because the Rambam does say that when he presents his own view, he'll say li nira. But what this is clarifying is it's when it's his own shita, in terms of the lemaisa, but his own reasoning he won't introduce with li nira. So you can't always tell whether the Rambam had his own reasoning or not. And the examples that come to my mind, I think you and I did this when we were doing the fingernail cutting thing, that in many of the either health or superstitious things in Shas that the Rambam does codify, he'll often swap out the reasoning that the Gemara gives, which he says is either, like, he holds is either, like, superstitious or not legitimate, and he'll give his own reasoning. You know, like, the Gemara says, don't have Tashmi Shemitah by candlelight because your kids will get epilepsy, you know? So the Rambam doesn't hold by that. So he brings it down, lahalacha, but he says it's because of tznius reasons, you know? He puts it in, like, sexual ethics, not health, you know? So the Rambam will not clue you in to say, like, lean nearer there because he's using the din of the Gemara. Yeah.
So basically, when the Rambam thinks that the Gemara held it, he won't say, but when the Rambam doesn't think the Gemara initially held it, just, like, says nothing on the topic, as far as he can tell, or at least, as in to say, then he's learning, he doesn't think the Gemara said anything on it.
Right.
He still thinks he'll say
believe. Yeah, like, the example that's fresh in my mind, because I just went over it, is when the Rambam talks about the restoration of smicha, and how that could be done, he introduces it with li nira, and then he ends off by saying v'hadavar tzarech hechreya, like, this needs to be decided. So it seems to be clear that he's not, there was no statement in the Gemara that actually proposes what he proposes.
Where is he at?
In Sanhedrin in the somewhere in the first program. Yeah. Okay. Then this is another new point. He says, in this vein, Rav Rabinovich makes the following astute observation. Some of these arguments have previously appeared in Rambam's Arabic language halakhic works, the commentary to the Mishnah, Sefer Mitzvot's response and letters. In many places in these works, the Rambam states his sources explicitly and quotes from them. An examination of these materials shows that a quotation is always in the original language of the source, while the original ideas are in Arabic. Since some of these arguments appear in the Mishnah Torah as well, we can conclude that those that appeared in the other writings in Arabic are not quotations from Talmudic sources, but original arguments devised by the Rambam himself. And then he gives an example where he, the famous Rambam in the beginning of Halachas of Sippur, where he compares it. He says it's from Zachor Ziyom HaZeh, and he says, Kamosha Nemar Zachor Ziyom HaShabbos. So there are a lot of Mepharshim who try to figure out, like, where's the Rambam quoting from when he compares it to Shabbos? And Rabinovich, you know, shows from the original Arabic that, like, this is the Rambam's unique insight to compare the two. Last part is, he says, a significant part of the Yad Pashut is dedicated to reconstructing Rambam's interpretation of various sugyot in order to clarify the meaning of the halachot derived from them. In addition, Rambam follows their tradition of using Talmud Yerushalmi as an important source and expands its use in drawing halachot conclusions. As we saw in the previous example, Rav Rabinovich observes that the Rambam will sometimes use statements quoted from a Tana or an Amora and Talmud Yerushalmi to clarify a statement of his in the Bavli, and on this basis to formulate the halacha, which I don't know for sure, but I think a lot of the, like, historical commentators through the Rambam, you know, put more weight, since we put more weight on the Bavli, they assumed that the Rambam has to be reconcilable with the Bavli, and either did not look or did not have access to the Yerushalmis and the Tosaftas and try to integrate that into their analysis of the Rambam. Yeah.
Which is interesting, because, like, while, again, I understand, because, like, we definitely defer to the Bavli.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, in the Dhamma, like, the Rambam makes it pretty clear, like, he's using...
Right, he does say his sources, that's true, yeah. right, yeah.
I guess my head, I guess we're just doing the three cases where... based off of just the Bavli, you think it's Rambam's interpretation would be absurd, but it's the normal interpretation most people get from the Bavli, say a contradiction between what that person is Bavli or Shalmi, and that
right.
And look, so let's say we the Rambam he'll sort of create ukimtazal statements to make sure that the Bavli, that one Rav and Bavli or Shalmi doesn't contradict himself between the two sources.
Correct. Yeah, and I'm sure that there's whole discourse is written on the method that the Rambam uses for that kind of reconciliation, you know? Yeah. We're not going to have time to do the Purim thing today, but one more thing I highlighted here. He says, I will close this part of the review by returning to the characterization of Mishnah Torah as a work of art. It is almost axiomatic that great works of art generate significant interpretations that may be far beyond the original artist's conscious intent, and many interpreters don't feel constrained at all by the question, could the original creator have had this in mind? We've talked about this with Rambam, the joke with the, you know, ask this point to the Rambam saying, this guy doesn't know how to learn Rambam, yeah. Right? It is important to state that this is not the case with Rav Rabinovich. Yad Pashuta sees its goal as reconstructing the actual reasoning of Rambam that lies behind each and every halacha. This is, of course, a formidable task, and the essays in this section describe the author's approach to its fulfillment. So unlike, I don't know what Reb Chaim would say if you asked him, but, like, it seems pretty clear, you know, from, like, the way modern Rambam scholarship is, that, like, Brisker Torah on the Rambam is not even attempting to understand necessarily how the Rambam learned the sugya. It's attempting to define the halacha of the Rambam in abstract categories. And if the Rambam came, you know, and said, that's not what I meant, that might not affect the svara. Like, you know, it's clear that when we are learning the Yad Pashuta, he is trying to actually see how the Rambam arrived at the conclusion. Okay, so that's that. I guess one more thing that Isaac Lifter told me regarding a question we raised about why the setup of the days of Purim is based on the time of Yeshua ben Nun and not some other time. So Isaac pointed out that the wall cities at the time of Yeshua ben Nun are already a halachic category in Bate Arechoma and in other, you know, in there's already a system midoraisa of that category that is relevant for, like, you know, redeeming houses and such. So it would stand to reason that that's a category that this would use. Now, that's not to say, like, why they couldn't have created another category, you know, but I think it is a conservative interpretation of the halacha, you know, the kol d'tikun rabbanu k'ein d'oraisa tikun, so they're going to use that category. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So I think that was a good answer. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the plan to will be just to show you how it's not super long, but so well, I'll ask you. We have, I mean, I have 15 minutes from here to here. You want to do it now, or you want to?
I mean, I have 2 minutes at least.
Okay, all right. So let's do it now, because I would like to do this. So we could think about it. Okay, so the halacha in the Rambam was just this one. Ketzad chuba su'uda zo shiyochol basar v'isakin su'uda na kfiyasher tumse yado b'shos yain ad shishtaker v'iradim b'shikros. So I like the way he sets up the question. Check this out. So he says, did I read the wrong one? Wait. Oh, it's a little longer. Oh, whatever. We'll start it. Okay. So he says, I'm going to skip this part. Okay. Shosi yain achish taker. So he quotes the Gemara Megillah. Amar Rava, Michaiv inish lebesumi b'puraya adalo yad bein Arham lebaruch Mordechai. A person is obligated to be intoxicated on Purim until he doesn't know the difference between Arham and Baruch Mordechai. Ravim tamu minayin lo lerabbeinu shemasayim b'yiradim b'shikros. Many are astonished and say, where's the Rambam get that you fall asleep in drunkenness, right? That is something that only the Rambam says. Okay. And he's the first to say that. Umahi mashmaus gvulzeh. What is the sense in this limit or this parameter? Mi'idach. On the other hand, Divri Rava, Michaiv Inish Lavasume Vahule, Afheim Tunim Hesper. You also need to explain the Gemara that you need to get drunk, right? What is the deal with that? Re'e Hilchos Tfila, Dalet Yud Zain, Kasav Rabbeinu Shikr Ayis Palel. So in Hilchos Tfila, the Rambam says, a person who's Shikr should not daven, Im his Palel Tfila Satueva. And if he davens, his Tfila is an abomination. Shasui Ayis Palel, Im his Palel Tfila Satfila. A Shasui, someone who is literally drunk, right? Like he's drunk, not intoxicated. He should not daven, but if he daven, his tefillah is a tefillah.
Someone who has drunk.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny because in English we use the word drunk to mean like, yeah. You know, totally intoxicated, whereas we say shazui is like buzzed, you know. Izihu shikr, what is the definition of a shikr in Hilchos Tefillah? Zesh ino yachol ledaber bifnei hamelach. That's someone who is not able to speak in front of a king. B'shasui, shiyachol ledaber bifnei hamelach ino mishabish. Shasui can speak in front of a king and not be confused or not mess up. Nevertheless, once he drank a revius of yain, he should not daven until the wine is removed from him. Okay, that's one halacha. So he's using the method we use also, which is cross-referencing Rambams, okay, which is another thing that people don't necessarily do. Okay. We read that yesterday. Okay. End quote. We did not read this. In Deos, kishe hachacham shosei yain, eno shosei ela kedei lishros achila shebameav. When a chacham drinks wine, he should only drink enough to soak the food in his innards. B'chol hamishtaker harzei chute umegune umafsid chachmaso. Anyone who makes himself drunk is a sinner, is disgusting, disgraceful, and ruins his chachma. V'im nishtaker b'fnei amei haaretz, and if he becomes drunk in front of ignoramuses, harzei chilas Hashem, then he's desecrating God's name. Okay, end quote. In the more Nevuchim 3:8, Kasav, he says, Hamasibus l'shesios hamashakrim, tihye harpasim be'enecha yosur gedola mihis kapsus b'nei adam irumim chashufe sheis hanifnin b'makom echad. So he's saying the parties where people get drunk should be more disgraceful in your eyes than huge gatherings of people who are like basically like naked and exposed all in one place. Drunkenness is the activity of a person who is bad in his bechira. Okay, so building a case here that the Rambam is against shikrus, right? Lefikach, in lefarish kavanas rava lomar shiyishte adam bepurim ad shiyish tabish v'lo yeda bein araham lebaruch mordechai mitel shikrus. So therefore, you can't say according to the Rambam that the statement of Rava in the Gemara is you should become drunk to this degrading point. That would not make sense. Okay. Baram, however, Lamadu be'eruvin samach dal ramabez amar rami bar ava derech mil v'shena koshu mafigin esayayin. So he says traveling, I think on foot for the distance of a meal, and then any amount of sleep will negate the wine. Okay, amar Rav Nachman amar Rava bar avuha lo shanu ela shashasa kedei revis. That's only if you drank a revis. Okay, because we probably know from experience that you can't just like take a nap for koshu and then like get rid of total drunkenness. He says, "Who should derech meal o shena mafiginosa? Aval shasa yosur mirevis. But if you drank more than a revis, kol shekin shederech toradito v'shena mishakarto. If you drank more than a revis, then walking is going to make it worse, and sleeping is going to make it worse. Okay, it's going to increase the shikros. Okay, forget whether that's actually true. V'hetik mimrazo harif, and the rif brings down that lahalaha. Okay, mi'ata divir rabbeinu berurim. Now the Rambam's words are clear. Okay, how so? Hachiyuv hu shiyishte yayin yosir mirbis. So you're obligated to drink wine more than a revis. Okay, because less than revis would be shasui. So you have to get more than shasui, which is shikar. V'techav shashasa yosir mirbis yiyashen. But then immediately after drinking a revis, you should go to sleep. V'nim says hashena mishakarto. So then the sleep will increase the drunkenness. Okay. Ad shemishtavish, until he becomes confounded. Ve'eno yodea lahavchin bein aruham labarach Mordechai, and he doesn't know the difference. V'hayu shekasav rabbeinu. That's why the Rambam writes v'shose yain ad shishtaker. Drink wine until you become drunk. Klomar yishte yosem yirevis. Drink more than revis, kadesh besofo shel davar yishtaker, so that it will ultimately make you drunk, right? Because we do know that wine takes a while to kick in. Okay, v'eich yagiel shikrus. How do you reach shikrus? V'yiradim b'shikrus. Fall asleep in shikrus. Shahari hashena meshakarta, because the sleep will make you more drunk. Val shikrus shel shena ina begeder holus v'sichlus. But the drunkenness of being asleep is not in the definition of wildness and foolishness. Shahari yashinu, because he's asleep. V'chein matzanu biyushami Sanhedrin ches zayin yain v'shena l'rashayin hanayel lehem v'hanayel olam. So it says in Yushalmi Sanhedrin 8:7, wine and sleep for the rashayim, it's a pleasure for them and it's pleasure for the world. Okay, pleasure for them because they get drunk, and it's pleasure for the world because the world gets free from rashayim for a little while. But ula tzadikim ra lehem ra l'olam. But for tzadikim, it's bad for them and bad for the world. Amar Rabbi Abahu bilvad yain im rov shena. That is only about wine with a lot of sleep. Amar Rabbi Yonasan Yeshenim Hein Kima Mipne Shetehe Da'atam Yusheves. Yeshenim Hein Kima. They sleep a little bit so that their minds should be settled. I'm not sure what that means. Zehu Shekasav Rabbeinu Shishtapir V'Yiradim B'Shikrus. V'Kachis Kaim Bo Yayin V'Shenim Ma'at Ulevasov Tehe Da'atam Yusheves. Oh, in other words, you sleep a little bit to, and then get your mind in the regular spot. So this is an example, whether or not you buy the explanation, this I think is a good example of what the essay was saying, how he's trying to reconstruct how the Rambam was learning the Sugya based on other Rambams and based on these primary sources, and like putting it together in a way that's consistent with everything. Very different than Brisk, also very different than the Achronim, because the Achronim, the classical Achronim, at least on the Noskelim on the Rambam, will typically just quote the sources and sometimes engage in some of this type of thing, but not as detailed as this. And then the Katha will bring down like many other Rishonim and like pit them against each other in classical, like Pilpul style, you know? Right. So the difference, by the way, between this and the popular understanding of the Rambam is the popular understanding is you sleep, and when you're asleep, you don't know the difference between Aruham and Baruch Mordechai. That's like based on the loose Ramah that we did last year, which we want to look at again. But this is actually trying to construct the reasoning that is consistent with the Rambam's halachic definitions of Shikrus and Shasui and the parameters that he sets out in his other work. So I thought that's like it's a creative way to learn the Rambam. Yeah. Certainly not the way it's practiced by most people, but yeah. Okay. We did it. That was even in less time than I thought. Okay. Then I'll just do the two lines that I skipped because I didn't think we'd have time. He just brings down on Ketzah Chovasuda Zo. So in the Tosefta in Megillah 1:5, it says, Medaktikim b'magbis Purim. Thank you. We are not medaktik in the gathering of Purim. The reason I said that is that the actual Tosefta begins with medaktikin, but this is the second half of the Tosefta. Aval lokuchim es ha'agalim v'shokhtim v'okhinosan. But we collect calves and we shech them and eat them. V'hamosar al yipo l'kis shel tzedakah. And the excess we do not put in the tzedakah thing. So then the Abshuta says, l'fenenu b'tefusim huva'a b'raisa kazo b'vava metziah ayin ches amud beis. So in our published editions, then that brisa from the Tosefta is brought down in Bava Metzia. Aval muchach mikama rishonim shehapiska aval lokin es hagalim lo haisa lifneim b'gemara. So there are rishonim who bring down that phrase about we purchase calves did not appear in the Gemara. Rehagos agra al gilion sham v'tosefta kapshuta al kopanim mevur sheochlim basar b'sudas purim. But from that it is clear that they would have meat in the Sudas Purim. Okay, so that's Again, that's Yad Pshuta, finding a raya that they would eat meat. And then he throws in, Rei Hilchos Yom Tov Vav Yud Ches, Shein Simcha Ela B'Basar V'Ein Simcha Ela B'Yayin, right? But it's this, the first source is more important because it's actually showing that part of the expenses that we pay for the Aniyim on Purim is meat, dafka. So, you know, that's an interesting thing. And it's also possible, by the way, that... no, that's a different question. Yeah. Okay, that's it. All right, very good. So we'll plan to go on next week in the Rambam. Yeah.
If you've gained from what you've learned here today, please consider contributing to my Patreon at www.patreon.com/RabbiSchneeWeiss. Alternatively, if you would like to make a direct contribution to the Rabbi Schneeweiss Torah Content Fund, my Venmo is at Matt-Schneeweiss, and my Zelle/ChaseQuickPay and PayPal are MattSchneeweiss@gmail.com. Even a small contribution goes a long way to covering the cost of my podcast and will provide me with the financial freedom to produce even more Torah content for you. If you would like to sponsor an article, shiur, or podcast episode, or if you are interested in enlisting my services as a teacher or tutor, you can reach me at RabbiSchneeweiss@gmail.com. Thank you to my listeners for listening. Thank you to my readers for reading. And thank you to my supporters for supporting my efforts to make Torah ideas available and accessible to everyone.